Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. Tonight's creative is the beautiful, illuminating, compassionate, intelligent, divine Jennifer Seren. She is an internationally acclaimed singer and songwriter. She has a new song out, performed alongside Narada Michael Walden, Ladysmith Black Mambazo, and Carlos Santana. It is about food insecurity and climate change. It is a bold and brilliant song with a necessary message. You can watch the video on YouTube or you can check her out on jenniferseranonline.com. This episode is brought to you by the new documentary Whirlybird. This is a wholly unique take on the story of Los Angeles told through stunning aerial footage and remarkable home videos by Marika Gerard and Zoe Tour. Whirlybird reframes many of the city's pivotal moments of the 1990s in Los Angeles, including the O.J. Simpson pursuit and the 1992 riots. Available in theaters starting August 5th and on demand starting August 6th. You can check it out on iTunes, Amazon Prime, Vudu, YouTube, all of the major platforms. For more information, please go to whirlybirdfilm.com. Grab your cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host Pup, and enjoy the show. Good morning or good afternoon for you. It's so
good afternoon. Yeah,
it is so wonderful to speak with you. I know we were struggling to try to get it scheduled. It's always hard with different time zones, but it's always exciting as well.
Always.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
We're gonna jump right in. Tell me about Wake Up, because I've been doing Earth Day stuff all month. I love celebrating our Earth. I love people that are doing things to bring awareness and to make changes. So tell me how that all started.
Well, it's not the first time that I've been involved in trying to get awareness on things. I sort of dabbled a little bit in 2015 and 16, an animated video called Rise Up. And that was just more about trying to bring some, community feeling, bringing people together. It was more targeted at, the animation, you can understand it, at young people. Wake Up was the first song I did for awareness of adults in the community. And the inspiration really was the summer where a lot of police violence and community group on group attacks shortly after Charlottesville, and the overall message was we can do better, right? If you're trying to start from a place of negative, you think that we couldn't do better, you're wrong. We can do better. So then came the song Wake Up. We were very lucky. Ladysmith Black Mambazo sort of personified the harmony that we heard in our head. And then Carlos Santana happened to be in the studio one day, and Narda played it for him. He liked it so much. He said, would you like me to do something on it? Yeah, yes, please.
You're not going to say no to Carlos Santana.
No, he's a very switched on and kind and involved person, everybody says, right? So he's been involved in a lot of awareness issues over the years. So that was good. And we did other things, political things, but so Earth Day came around and the Jensen communications people were talking about putting something together for Earth Day, because actually I'm involved in a business in the Middle East, which is about connecting farms with restaurants and homes to bring fresh food to the table daily. So what we provide is a platform, a logistics platform, where the people buying the good, restaurants and people like us at home, can directly through the platform find what they're looking for. Many farms sign onto our platform. And if you put in the order today, so restaurants kind of do it at night, for instance, the next morning, things are freshly cut, delivered to the restaurant. So we're speaking about truly fresh. So we kind of put that, catalyzed a little bit of what we were thinking. And it's just one aspect of Earth Day. Let's get rid of those air miles. Let's put fresh fruit on the table instead of insecticides and whatever else they have to do to process and put it in a warehouse for 6 months or a year before the supermarket ever sees it. Because where we are in Dubai, in the Emirate, they sometimes are selling in the supermarkets 6 month or 1 year old apples, bananas,
that's crazy,
other vegetable. It is, I mean, I think it's going on in many places in the world.
There's two problems with it, because I don't believe that apples and bananas are supposed to last that long. So it makes you wonder,
right?
What did you do to it? And also, like, why? Just being stored away. There's so many hungry people. And what you were talking about with working with the farms and the restaurants, it's such a healthy relationship in so many aspects, yeah, isn't it? It's healthier for the consumer that's eating it. It's healthy business practice financially for the farmers. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. What a wonderful relationship that is.
Yeah. Well, and I think we can do this everywhere, right? And many people are trying to do versions of this, and it doesn't have to be one way. It should be wherever the geography is, there should be a way to eliminate all of that, I call it phony food, and give people real food, and not have to dump hundreds of thousands or millions of gallons of milk because it cannot be delivered, right? It's those things are, to me, that's just insane to be doing that.
Well, I think part of the issue is that, lack of a better word, like farm to fork, it needs to not be like something trendy. It's not the cool thing to do. It needs to be like, that's the way it should be. That should be the normal. That should be how everybody gets their food. I think it's more of like a cool or a hipster, or, you know, just like make it mainstream, make it normal. Don't make it be like some niche thing that only certain people do.
Exactly. That's exactly.
I would love to have fresh veg. I would love to have fresh fruits. So how do we get, I mean, we're still going to have to have some sort of transportation, unfortunately. Yes. We're still going to have that with the CO2 emissions from the vehicles. However, with a platform like yours, doing the logistics and saying, okay, this city, so with your logistics, you are saying, hopefully, cutting down on transportation and those hazards to the environment just due to the exhaust and the emissions and whatnot.
Well, I think, for instance, if we were talking about the U.S., my understanding, and I'm not the expert on this, my understanding is that there are definitions of local food. So for where we are, where we've set up the business originally, we are within, 50 miles, 100 miles. So big highways that connect. And right now we're only doing, within a 50-mile radius, and it's very easy. So we can do fresh fish, all vegetables and fruit. In California, for example, they've defined it one of two ways, either within 400 miles or, as elsewhere in the United States, in state. So it's a little different definition of local, but still shouldn't need airplane,
right?
Trains were the original transport, trucks now, which doesn't cut down on all the transportation, but it can cut down on the airline, the ozone layer that way. Mm-hmm. But maybe as people try, they can do it closer and closer, or set up smaller and smaller geographies, right? I know people are putting farms in old containers, shipping containers, or abandoned buildings. They can do hydroponics, or all of this is to be developed. Definitely.
And it should be developed. We had a conversation the other day about here in Florida, we are lousy with abandoned strip malls, and you see brand new ones being constructed all the time. Do something with those, please, or knock them down, plant stuff.
You're right.
Yeah, I know. Earth month, earth year,
Every day is Earth Day. Yeah.
Wake up. To say local would be in state. Well, California is a huge state. Florida is a huge state. I'm not great with geography either. So if you're going to bring me fish from the Gulf to my restaurant, when maybe we should be a little more defined with our locale and say, no, okay, you guys are over here. You're within X amount of miles from the East Coast and the Atlantic. And you guys on the West Coast are X amount from the Gulf, and that's what you get, and this is what you get, and we're not driving 400, you know, miles to bring you this. So it seems like maybe a case-by-case, state-by-state basis, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have the landlocked states that don't have any of that. So yeah, maybe there has to be a different kind of logic mm-hmm. for bringing fresh seafood or fish to the landlocked states. Mm-hmm. But I mean, all of that can be figured out, I think, if everybody just decides that they're in it together, and we're going to fix this logic of transportation of fruits and vegetables, anything fresh, and that we're going to store it. Right. Because it may make good sense for profit, but it doesn't make good sense for health.
You just hit the nail on the head right there. Yeah. Profit versus health. And it makes no sense to me. Again, I'm in Florida. It makes no sense to me to go to my grocery store and see California oranges. Don't get me wrong, I love California. I absolutely adore California, but why? We have our own orange groves.
Right. Yeah.
I understand if Missouri needs some California oranges or even from out of country, if there's a demand for specific types of fruits and veg, grow it here. Can we grow it here? You know, you're right. A lot of thought has to be put into it. And the first thought has to be we're in it together, like you said, literally.
And when we are, I think there's also a sort of a distorted expectation that has been enabled by large supermarkets and large food business to make us expect that we can have a veg or a fruit that's out of season. We'll just bring it into the store because it's sitting in the warehouse for the last 6 months. And now, oh, you know, you can have bananas in February.
I don't want a 6-month-old banana. I really don't.
And truth in advertising apparently does not extend to supermarket sales of fresh fruits, right? On the FDA requires expiry dates and ingredients, but nowhere in the supermarket does it say, have these 1-year-old apples picked 1 year ago. Right. It doesn't say that. Nobody knows that's what they're eating. And there's something wrong with that.
Okay, that's crazy, because if you buy a can of tuna fish or a bottle of Tylenol, there's an expiration date on it when you're supposed to eat it by or take it by. And we all know expiration dates can, the efficacy maybe might be affected, but honestly, you probably won't die. Maybe the tuna fish if you ate it too bad. But yeah, but to pick up a banana, it doesn't say you better eat this in 3 days. The vegetarians are going to riot. Oh my gosh. No, meat has an expiration date. And I would assume that fish does as well. Yes. But then again, that could have been frozen for who knows how long.
So, I live in Hong Kong most of the time when there's no pandemic, because I'm stuck here with no flights to go back. But Hong Kong is another place that they import the majority of their food. Sometimes North America, sometimes Australia, New Zealand, Western Europe. Even now we have okra from Israel, and we have limes from Peru, and we actually are told when we have to eat something by. In Western Europe, they require, and in places like India, what they will do is they will put a manufacturing date on something. And then the rule is, if there is no expiry, you must consume it within 2 years. So every country seems to have their thing. But Hong Kong, we are in that situation. We import almost everything. So fish, this was my train of thought. Fish is brought in, flown in fresh locally. The price is like triple what you might think you want to pay. And when it doesn't sell within a few days, they freeze it. Frozen fish is brought in, but it has to say previously frozen in the labeling. Yeah. So they've come a bit farther, I think, than some countries in giving you more information. But still, we are all stuck. We know that we have to import the food if we want to eat that particular thing.
I'm not a fish person, but the idea of, I mean, is that healthy to have had it fresh and then freeze it? I guess within a certain time period, maybe?
It depends on what we're talking about. I think fish has a shorter life cycle, 2-3 months frozen. Mm-hmm. Chicken might have up to 6 months. Meat, you know, they all have something, and I'm not sure what each one of them is. But yeah, there is a maximum freezing time. You either have to consume it or you must throw it.
So, well, see, I was like, well, this makes me want to be a vegetarian. But then we got those 6-month-old bananas. So now I don't know what to do. I'm just going to eat chocolate bars, apparently.
There you go.
There's such a waste problem with food in regards to, I'm going to say a burger chain. I won't say a name. If a burger chain closes up for the night and they still have burgers, and were someone hungry to come in and ask, were there any that they didn't sell because they're about to close, they would tell them no, but we're going to throw them in the dumpster and you can go get them from there. That bothers me first. So there is that there. But to know that we as a world have these warehouses that are burning energy by operating and they're storing foods for 6 months to a year. It makes no sense. Why? For profit, for the supermarkets.
Because what supermarkets do also, you know, they don't buy the things in. It's shelf space. They rent shelf space. That's the supermarket model. So it's the middlemen, you say, or women, it's a distribution business. So big farms might have their own food and then they might also buy from little farms. And then they ship to distributors. And the distributors might be their own distributors or they might be third party. And then those people on sell. Somewhere in that whole formula, people are storing. Supermarkets are not the ones actually storing. The people who are holding the foods to deliver. And supermarket model also is if we don't sell it, you have to take it back. So, you know, there's a whole nexus here of trying to make up costs and maximize profit margins. It's a very complicated formula. But to your point, waste management is also an issue, right? Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, where do they send it back to?
They dump it. So this is another problem that we're trying to solve. And again, a much smaller geography. We are talking with coffee companies to collect their grinds and then sell it to farms because coffee grinds apparently make very good fertilizer.
Yes.
And you know, further steps in this waste management would be to collect the waste from the restaurants. I think it's a much further down the road to collect it from homes. So we can do larger entities. So hotels and restaurants, we can take that food waste. And there has to be somebody else involved because not everybody can do everything. So we are a logistics platform, but we can enable the chain of collection and then passing on to somebody who can actually use it and really bring the silly waste down. These are things that, you know, developing countries and their own farms, they know this. So they take their own waste and they plow it back into their own fields. Well, why can't we do that for everybody? So I'm like the planet warrior for, you know, natural food and waste management.
Just on a local scale, a general you goes to restaurants, gets their food waste, just food waste, scraps, burgers that didn't get sold, they get turned into compost for the farms, helps raise crops and goes right back to the restaurants. Also, biofuel, you get someone that goes around and collects all that used grease, that used oil. There's so many options.
There should be some kind of a barter that says that for X number of pounds of waste, you know, compost, there might be a slight discount on the next delivery of foods, or there has to be some kind of you know how they have mileage credits and air mile credits for, there's got to be some formula somebody can come up with to make this advantageous.
Humanity, I tell you what, but I don't feel like a lot of times we're willing to do something without incentive, the whole what's in it for me attitude. So an incentive maybe to the local restaurants, perhaps some sort of discount on the food that comes in by getting rid of their food waste to support that specific farm or these specific farms. Aren't we crazy as humans because we won't do anything that's right without really being rewarded for it? We shouldn't have to be rewarded. The reward is that the benefit to our health, the benefit to our planet, but incentivize the supermarkets to do right, but we'll take them on later. This is your world. This is your earth. So now work with me, work with us and see how we can, you know, make changes.
And I think a lot of the young today actually are concerned. I think their perspective might be different than ours, but I think they have the same concern. But I think their disillusionment has as much to do with seeing older people, older than you and me, in positions of policy and legislation, pretending like this isn't the problem. This, I think, switches young people off. Because they can see, you know, we keep thinking we can reason with them, whereas the younger people are saying, I don't think there's any way to reason with people who refuse to to acknowledge.
Right.
So I don't know. Whatever we can do is make them accountable. Make the people in positions of policy power and legislative power. We have to make them accountable.
And honestly, we need fresh blood. We need younger people. We need people that believe in science. They believe that they're actually, you know, climate change is real. And you're right. Again, it comes down to us and it comes down to the younger people because we're the ones that are going to the polls.
So it really is. They can change the policies, but who's going to make them do it?
Right.
I think it's awareness. So when the more people who are aware and feel the pending doom have to all speak up. Everybody has to do their part. So we're talking about food and waste today, but you know, there is the petroleum industry, there is, you know, this deforestation, there's all those things. And every single issue has to have its champion in one area. So right. I mean, I applaud you for spending your time and energy for an entire month to try to bring the word and
I've learned so much. I've learned so much this month, and I've been terrified a couple times this month. But yeah, leadership, policy people, they are changing policy, but it's up to us to change the policymakers, right? And don't let them divert your attention from what's actually important.
Mm-hmm. Hold their feet to the fire, really.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's a big issue.
It is a huge issue.
And many tentacles, yeah.
It is the fact that if you plant one tree for every square foot of your apartment or your home, it negates your, I think it's your CO2 something. It negates what your house would put out just by planting those trees. So if you have a 2,000 square foot house, 500 square foot apartment, whatever, and you plant those trees. Mm-hmm. So I've learned so much and I'm so glad that I did it. So the song that, it's Wake Up, Every Day is Earth Day.
Well, the promotion is Every Day is Earth Day.
Okay.
But the song is called Wake Up.
And know. That was with the...
Yeah, it's the South African group, the Ladysmith Black Mambazo. They did a lot of work in the 70s or 80s, maybe with Paul Simon, the yeah.
Were they
Rhythm
on
of the
that
Saints
one song?
In Brazil. Yeah, you can call me Joe,
yes!
Or yeah. We call them, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. So that's them, the Ladysmith Black Mambazo group.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then Carlos Santana just being like, hey, you want me to put something on here? Cool.
He added the riff. Yeah. You can't imagine how many people when they heard the song said, within four measures, is that Carlos Santana? Because he has a following that everybody knows exactly his style. It's amazing. Yeah.
He's definitely distinct. And that's a true sign of a legend is when, like you said, within a couple measures.
You
like,
don't confuse him with anybody. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
He seems like a really cool dude. He does.
I think he's much loved for all of his community effort, his support of groups like this and his own individual. I know he has his own charities.
I'll have to post links to all that too when I do the show.
Yeah. Great.
I can't believe I'm still stuck on the 6-month-old bananas because it's really bothering me. I want to go to my grocery store and demand justice right now.
Yeah, I don't want to rain on your parade, but sometimes it's a year.
No.
You know, and supermarkets explained this to us when we were trying to, you know, do our market research about even getting supermarkets to participate. And they're like, we don't need you. You know, we've got our own deal going here. We just, you know, apples last a year. And I'm like, oh
and
my
it's,
God.
It's money. It boils down to money. Oh God, it's so frustrating. Obviously,
exactly.
They've been doctored.
Exactly.
Like, I love science. I don't like that kind of science.
That's what they call the taste test. Yeah. But pick one off a tree and buy one in the supermarket and see, you know, anyway.
Well,
yeah.
I can tell you straight up the difference between a real fresh organic or not doctored tomato and that pale, disgusting thing that you get at the grocery store. I'm telling you. With the, what is it, genetically modified and the insecticides and the hormones.
Yeah. Yeah.
God. I mean, you know, those chickens didn't get that plump naturally. Okay. They've had enhancement, but then it contributes to things like autism, things like mental delays, things like precocious puberty because of the hormones and whatnot. I don't know that we are blind to it, but we're really not paying attention because
I think we're not informed. I think people are not informed. Depends on where you live. So just a bit of trivia. France does not allow anything what they call GMO, genetically modified, none. So if you want to have real food, live in France. Mm-hmm. They don't allow it.
Right.
And yet one of the biggest producers of GMO food is the next door neighbor, Italy, Monsanto. Mm-hmm. So we all have to educate ourselves on where we want to eat,
right?
Where we want to live. I think the U.S. has not been, nor has Canada, been that effective in managing this GMO issue. I don't think anybody is aware of whether they're eating GMO food or not.
Again, money. I think also, I mean, for the as a consumer or as a grocery shopper, you go in and you see this chicken and then you see this chicken and this one's no hormones, no antibiotics, blah, 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 blah. It's a good chicken. It's so much more expensive. You are on a budget. You're going to go, I need the $1.99 thighs. How are we going to fix this? Yeah. We need to make good food affordable. And I think, as you were saying, by pun intended, farming it out, getting the food from local, you know, why can't
it can be done?
Why can't it be done? And again, healthy relationship, financial health for the farmer, probably a little mental health because they have the security of knowing that this store or this restaurant has a contract with them to purchase fruits or veg or beef or whatever it is that they produce every month or every week. And that brings them a sense of comfort or a sense of security. And then the restaurant has the same sense of security knowing that they're going to get good food and in turn, turn that good food into good lunches, good dinners, good breakfast, and get lots of customers. The basis of the meals, the fruits and veg and meat and fish and cream is good. Yeah. It just benefits everything. And then whatever you don't sell before closing time, give to the homeless.
Yeah,
put your scraps out to be picked up. And
There is a business in Hong Kong that does that. It's called Prêt à Manger. It's I'm not sure if it's come to North America. I think I've seen it in Canada. And they're in Europe. So it's Pret and then A. So it means ready to eat, like ready to wear, but ready to eat. Mm-hmm. And they make sandwiches every day. They make their own bread throughout the day. And then they do the sandwiches and whatever. And at the end of the day, any unsold sandwiches, there are businesses, for instance, a beauty salon that I used to know. They had an arrangement at one Pret. They would pick up the used sandwiches and then they would serve them to their client in the evening. And then there were food kitchens that would collect from another branch and then they would serve them in their own kitchen. And this particular business, Pret, that was one of their signatures.
Was no waste because that food's getting eaten.
And they were doing a community service. So anybody can do that. It doesn't have to be, it's not rocket science.
Right.
You can solve three problems at once.
And this was in Hong Kong. That is someplace I've always wanted to go. It just looks so beautiful. And
it's a lot of fun. It's a very dynamic city. You think it's a concrete jungle because that's all you ever see in the tourist magazines. But 25% is built. 75% is green, mountains, reservoirs, streams, inlets. You know, we don't have lakes. It's not that kind of geography, but you have coves, right? All around the whole perimeter of the territory. Everybody can get out on hikes and you never hear a car. It's a fascinating place. A lot of
history. And you said most or all of your food is imported?
Most, yeah. We have in the new territories where it is, there's still farmland.
Okay.
We do have some things farmed, but the majority of the green land is, it's protected by the government, it's country parks. Okay. You know, it helps the environment that keeps it that green. And they do maintain it. They do a very good job of controlling things. Yeah. So, and people are very active in Hong Kong because they have the resource to do that. They can get out there. And it's a temperate climate. So it's, we don't have any severe winters. None.
Yeah. And we're not recommending, you know, chopping down the trees in the protected parks to put farmland up. So it's every little bit, every little bit that you can do if you have to have it imported to say, it's a balance.
Yes. Well, even though we know a lot is imported, we try our very hardest to try to eat the fresh things that come in. You know, some things, you know, don't preserve well. Even we can get some fresh vegetable, but still too much import, way too much import.
So your platform, getting the farm food to the restaurants, you said is located in Dubai.
Yeah. So the logistics platform, it's actually created in India and it's a cloud-based platform. We have a lot of collaboration with, people like Microsoft as well help manage the cloud, but it is the business itself that is runs on the platform is in Dubai. Yeah. And it is for the Sharjah, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, the Emirates area.
Well, I asked that because I was wondering because Dubai seems like a progressive forward thinking in regards to technologies and future, if that was why, if they Like they were more receptive or more progressive about it. Oh, really?
Well, yeah, coincidentally, they had already had an intention, and they were formulating a policy around what they call food security. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine for a desert country, it's mostly desert, food security is a huge issue. So what happens if there's no planes to fly the food in? They will starve. So they started this years ago. There's upwards of 30,000 or more farms in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. That's a lot of farms. Yeah. So it's a lot of reclaimed land, of course. There's a certain amount of hydroponics that are run by, you know, smaller businesses. And then there's a couple of sheikhs who have built themselves big hydroponic solutions. There's protected farming outdoors, but they put nets across things. You have to protect a lot of things from the sun. So there are other ways to do the agriculture. There's fish farms in the south and in Oman, which is next door. So they're really focused on food security. What the element they found missing is awareness of the population. People aren't aware. The farms were not selling enough locally. So we've stepped in and we are one of the solutions that now people are more aware that they can get everything they want somewhere nearby within 50 miles. The restaurants are delighted. I mean, we have testimonials from chefs of very, really upscale and, you know, medium-sized restaurants that love what we're doing. Some of the hotel chains and catering businesses, it makes it much easier for them to plan certain kinds of food if they're not depending on imported things, right? Mm-hmm. It's also cheaper to get it locally than to buy it imported, right?
Absolutely. It makes no sense that such a big place as can do it and smaller places can't.
Because you don't have to, not every business has to invest in their own technology. You're really just ordering off of a platform. So the restaurant, let's say they have 50 tables. They order the food that they need to produce for how many meals the next day. Maybe it's 200 meals. Chefs know what the quantities are. They put the order in the next day. It's cut, it's delivered enough, and they're not worried because it was on the platform, so it is available. They don't have to wait to see what the supermarket or the market has to then make a menu, mm-hmm. right? They can design their menu around what they see on the platform. It solves so many problems.
It's genius. And again, it's about having the information you need, isn't it? Let's raise awareness. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, I agree.
We started talking about the environment. We're talking about food. I like this. I could go for days about this stuff.
It does solve an environmental problem.
It does. And the fact Dubai and all of that, it's a desert and they're growing food. So what's wrong with people that they can't plant a little something in their backyard? Come on, it can be done. And I think hydroponics, not to say that they're the gardening or the farming of the future, but
it's just one aspect. Yeah.
But it is revolutionary. It's you don't need acres of soil. Like you said, a high rise or, you know, because they can be grown in stacks, right? They can go, you can go vertical.
Yes. I visited one in Dubai a year ago before this whole pandemic started. I went over to see how the business was running. My partner took me to a hydroponic indoor farm, and it was a building right on the main highway. It looked like an industrial warehouse. That's what it looked like. And they had been in business maybe a year and a half or so, and they had only built up, I think, 20% of the warehouse. Mm-hmm. And it was 10 stacks high, and it was maybe, I think they had letters on the rows. Maybe they had something like 30 something rows, and the rows were the length of my arms and all the way down tens of meters. And they said it was 7,000 square meters of growing space. And they were preparing the rest of the warehouse, which would have been another 35,000 square meters of space. And this part that we saw was just greens.
Oh gosh, this was so educational. I'm gonna have to research more into this because this is serious business. No pun intended, but people can do this. This can be done on a small scale. This can be done on a grand scale. All right. It was good talking to you. Thank you. Oh, thank you, Jen. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye. You too. Yes, all year. Bye. Just give me a look.